This morning we get back to our series within a series with another passage from 1 Timothy chapter 6 on the subject of money. And if you were here with us last week or if you caught it online, then you might remember that we looked at the idea of getting money and we looked at the background behind this horrific picture and learned the story behind that. We learned that more wealth does not necessarily lead to happiness. We learned that our stuff is only temporary. We learned that our real needs are actually quite simple, and we learned that this desire for more and more and more stuff is actually can very easily lead to sin. And so the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So this morning we continue with another aspect of this, and we look to another paragraph in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and we come to Paul's inspired advice concerning how we use our money or what we do with it once we have it. And this passage is 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19. This is found on page 1860 in our Pew Bibles. And as we make our way there, I want to make just a few comments concerning exactly who needs to be paying attention to these words. And I give this little disclaimer or explanation because as we get to 1 Timothy 6, 17, we're going to find that Paul tells Timothy to give a command or to instruct certain people who are rich in this present world. And so this paragraph is directed towards the rich. And I understand right there many of us may be tempted to breathe a sigh of relief. This passage is not about us because I am definitely not a rich person. And yet we need to look very carefully at this as we get into it. And I know the danger is that we go into this assuming that this is for other people. You know, those rich people out there, they need to do this, this, and this with their money. But this passage does not apply to me. And so maybe we think about Bill Gates or Warren Buffett or here locally, the Fauci family or, you know, any number of others that we could discuss. And we think, yeah, this is going to be about them. And so this is something that they really need to pay attention to. Last week, you may remember, we learned that to be happy and to say that we're living the American dream, most people, on average, feel that they need to be making roughly twice what they're making right now. I don't know if you remember that statistic. So whatever it is that I'm making now, I need twice to be happy. So if we think about that in terms of this passage addressed to the rich, we may be tempted to think the same way concerning what it means to be rich. I'm not rich. A rich person is anybody who makes roughly twice what I'm making. And so therefore, this passage does not apply to me. It applies to everybody else who makes more than I do. However, before we start thinking this applies to others and not us, let us stop by and visit globalrichlist.com. I put this on the church's Facebook page sometime Friday or Saturday. I plugged in a typical or roughly average salary from the Madison area and put in the figure of $80,000 a year. And this site very quickly calculated that somebody making 80 grand a year is in the top one-tenth of 1% in terms of income around the world. And to me, that was astounding to think that just $80,000 would put you in the top 10% of the top 1%, if that makes sense. And so I don't know if you can tell, there's a slight color difference under you. You are the little gold, I don't know if it's gold or kind of tan person, and all of these others are poorer than you are. And so that's just true for somebody making 80 grand a year in the Madison area. So I'm like, okay, 80 grand, that's a lot of money. So let's back that off. The poverty line for one person living alone in the U.S. right now is a yearly income of around $12,500. And so I plug that in, and for someone making $12,500 a year, notice that person would still be in the top 13% of all of the wealthiest people anywhere in this world. And so I point this out as we go into this, looking at Paul's instructions to rich people. We are the rich people. All right, we are the wealthiest people anywhere on this planet. And so as we go into this passage, we need to understand that even the poorest Americans rank among some of the wealthiest people anywhere in this world. And so we are the rich. Those of us here, we are the wealthy. And so with that in mind, let's look carefully at Paul's words to us. This is 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. As our tradition is, I want us to apply this passage to our lives today by looking at a brief series of very practical observations. What do we need to keep in mind as we use and as we manage the incredible wealth that God has given to us? And one of the first things we notice comes right away in verse 17, as we find that we, as the rich of this world, are to avoid the sin of pride. And so Timothy is to instruct, he is to issue a command to the rich of this world, that is, us in this room, that we are not to be conceited. And so as some of the richest people in the world right now, we need this warning. This is something that is a danger for us. With wealth comes a great danger. We understand many times when we get something, when we obtain more. If I get something today that I didn't have yesterday, something that I obtained with this great wealth that I have, when we obtain more, it is very natural for us to feel good about it. That is a normal reaction to getting something now that we didn't have yesterday. And so we get a raise, we get a new car, we get a new pair of pants at Goodwill, or whatever it is. When we get something, when we obtain more, we feel good about it. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have obtained it. But the danger in that is we become conceited. And that's the danger that Paul is warning about here. It was my education that led to this. Or it was my hard work that allowed me to get this new car. It was my brilliant intellect that gave me the power to get this shiny new canoe that my neighbor does not have. And so there is this feeling of accomplishment and pride. And we understand where that comes from. Because in a sense, that's warranted. In a sense, that makes sense that we have done this hard work and we've earned a living and we're able to get this thing that we didn't have before. And yet there is the danger there of taking that to a level where it's sinful, where we start looking down on other people. They don't have that because they didn't do what I've done, and so on. And so Paul warns us that we are not to be conceited. We're not to look down on others for not having the wealth that we have. And this mirrors God's warning to the Israelites. I believe we referred to it briefly in last week's lesson from Deuteronomy 8. You may remember as they were getting ready to cross the river over into the promised land that God gave them this stern warning. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, when you cross the river and when you move into brand new homes that you didn't build and when you get vineyards that you didn't plant and when you have all of these things, you might become proud. And you may think that you've done this for yourself. And then he gives the warning. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. And then God says, but you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth. And so instead of being conceited, we are to remember that God is the one who has given us the power to make a living. He gave us the strength. He placed us in this country at this time in history. He gave us the personality that we have. He gave us the wisdom. He gave us the skill to make a living. And when we end up among the richest 1% anywhere in this world, we need to be extremely careful to remember where this wealth came from. It is not because of how awesome we are. It is because God has blessed us and we're not to be conceited about it. So it's an attitude warning here at the beginning. The second big idea here is that we must put our trust in God and not in our riches. And that's very carefully, very closely related to the first idea. But notice Paul says we must not put our hope in the uncertainty of riches. And so we have the reminder that riches are uncertain. Jesus said in Matthew 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Most of us know from our own personal experience that riches and possessions are uncertain. Brand new cars and brand new houses have problems. They have issues. They fall apart almost immediately. Money comes and goes. Clothing wears out. The stock market actually goes down sometimes. So today we're on quite the run right now, but this is temporary. This cannot continue forever. We need to remember that wealth is very temporary. Riches can be stolen. Homes can be destroyed by fire. Retirement assets can be devastated by inflation or theft. In fact, no matter how much stuff we have, there are an infinite number of scenarios that can play out where any one of us in this room could end up broke and homeless by this time tomorrow. That is the nature of wealth. It is incredibly temporary. We think of the parable of the rich fool that Al read for us earlier, where Jesus told the story of that wealthy farmer who said to himself, "Soul," I don't know of anybody who talks like that, but it's a story. And so he says to himself, "Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Of course, that night he was worried. You know what he was worried about? He had too much stuff to fit in the place that he had to put it. And so he made big plans to tear down his barns, his perfectly good barns. He's going to tear them down and build bigger barns. And yet, as we know, that man died that very night. His soul was required of him. That was it. And the point of that story is what Jesus says in Luke 12:15. "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." So we are not to put our trust in the uncertainty of riches. It is all fleeting and it will not be here forever. Our trust is to be in God. There's a third practical lesson here, and that is we are to enjoy what God has given to us. This is something sometimes we may need to be reminded of. Notice, as Paul says in verse 17, we are to fix our hope on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. And so we are given permission from God to enjoy the wealth that he has supplied to us. We need to be thankful. We need to be humble about it, not conceited. As we learned previously, we need to put our trust in God and not in the wealth itself. But we do have the reminder here that God has supplied us with all things to enjoy. God gave us things that we can appreciate and enjoy. He has given us food, hasn't he? Abundant food in this country. Not only has God given us food, he has given us bacon. And bacon is awesome. And he's given us clothing and air conditioning and homemade ice cream and cheese curds. He's given us transportation, not just any transportation, but we have some nice vehicles parked outside this building this morning, especially compared to what people drive in other places in this world. He's blessed us with some amazing places to go. So not only did he give us cars, but he's given us places to explore in this country. Rivers and waterfalls and mountains and the Great Lakes and all kinds of beautiful places to go hiking and camping. He's given us homes and jobs and friends and children. He's given us clean water. I don't know if we always appreciate what an amazing blessing that is. And it amazes me also, especially, that with the flick of a finger, most of us have warm running water. Not just clean water that we can drink. We have warm water. And that amazes me. To get in the shower and touch that little knob and it's hot. That's an amazing thing. And until something goes wrong with the water heater. But that right there is just an amazing thing. Just the fact that we have water that is safe to drink. It's an amazing blessing that not many people have in this world, but among the top percent, that is a blessing that we have that we can enjoy while we have it. From time to time, businesses will do inventory, and some of you are very familiar with this. Several months ago, my daughter was in an accounting class, and she came home excited to tell me about all of the different ways of doing inventory. And I had no idea that there were so many different ways for businesses to account for all of the stuff that they have on hand from an accounting point of view. And it was an interesting conversation. And maybe there's a value to doing our own inventory from time to time. You know, not stuff on a shelf, but thinking through, what has God done for us? What are some of the blessings that we have? And just going through and listing some of the good things that God has given us to enjoy. Sometimes we sing the song, "Count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done." That is absolute truth, and we need to do that from time to time. But as Paul says here, we are to fix our hope on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. So we can enjoy the blessings we have. There is a fourth and a final lesson for those of us in this room, all of whom are rich, and that is we must also be generous and ready to share. He says, "Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed." When we have everything that we need, When we are rich as we are, it is so easy to turn our attention inward, isn't it? And to focus on ourselves. I don't have any huge financial needs that are unconquerable in my life right now, and so I'm going to turn my attention inward. Back in the 80s, people came up with the term cocooning. We know what that is with, you know, the caterpillar, butterfly kind of thing and the cocoon. We can do that as human beings, especially when we have wealth. We can go home at the end of the day and we can surround ourselves with the TV and the internet, and it's just us in our room and our little bubble and our cocoon. And it's very easy to miss a lot of the suffering in the world, and we are tempted to shut ourselves off from what's going on, and we assume that everybody else is okay when they're not. So Paul gives the reminder here that we need to be using our wealth to actually do good. So we have a few options. Like the prodigal son in Luke 15, we can waste our money on an extravagant lifestyle. Like the rich farmer that Al read for us in Luke 12, we can pile up our money, put it in huge heaps, you know, while other people around us are suffering. Or out of our respect for God and because of our love for others, we can do what Paul's telling us to do here. We can be generous and ready to share. We can keep our eyes open. We can reach out and actually help people in need. This is within the realm of possibility. This ties into what we were talking about in our class this morning about it's not too difficult, you know, to going up to heaven or down to earth kind of thing. This is within the realm of possibility. Notice in this passage, we are not commanded to end world hunger. We can't do this. This group in this room, we can't do that. We cannot eliminate homelessness. We can't fix poverty. We can't fix all poverty, even here in Madison. But notice Paul tells us to do something, and he says that the wealth that we have, we are to be generous with it. Right now, we have two awesome opportunities here at this congregation. One where there's more work than money involved, and one where there's more money than work involved. And so we have two very good options, or we might even be able to do both. On one hand, we have the clothing giveaway, as was referenced in the bulletin and in our welcome this morning, coming up this coming Saturday. We've done this for a number of years now, where we collect clothing around the community. We then distribute it free. It's like a free garage sale here on the grounds to anybody who needs it. No questions asked. And as we get ready for this, several will get together right here in this building tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. to sort some clothing. We've been sorting by size for several months now. If you've been down the stairs, just go down the stairs. It's huge. I mean, there's just like clothing chest deep down there. And almost all of it is sorted by size and by gender, men, women, and children. And so we've been doing that for several months. We were all caught up, as I understand it, about a week ago. Some more items have come in over the last week. And so if you can distinguish between small and large and men's and women's and children's clothing, there is a need for you in this building tomorrow morning at 11 if you're able to take off of work or to be here in whatever way. This is a good work that we can do. Then on Wednesday, we have what we lovingly refer to as cardio night. That is this coming Wednesday. After class, our mission as a congregation is to bring all of that clothing downstairs, upstairs. And all right, we can do it. This is within the realm of possibility. We've done it for years. And with 30 of us here on Wednesday, this only takes, I'm guessing, around 20 minutes. I mean, it's fast. It's like the, you know, fire water bucket brigade up the stairway here, and we just get it staged here so we're all ready to go for this coming Saturday morning. So be here Wednesday at 7. At 8 o'clock after class, we'll get that done. And then on Saturday, we also have another chance to jump in. Some will get here at 7 or before to help us get it set up, setting up tables, getting everything put out there. If you need to leave after that, that's fine. If that's what you can do, that is a huge help. If you can stay and interact with our guests, that is awesome as well. There are some interesting people who take advantage of the clothing, and it's good to interact with them. Or get here when we're wrapping it up. We close at 1. And so if you get here at 12:45, some of us will be tired. And if you can refresh our energy and come in at 12:45 and say, all right, where do these tables go? Where does this go? Get it done. That is another way to get involved and jump in and help getting it put away. So we're not talking about amazing feats of strength. You know, these aren't, you know, 200-pound boxes. There's no super intelligence involved. But there's a good thing going on over this week here at this congregation. It takes all of us to make it happen. And usually we have more than 100 family units who come on this property and benefit from it. I don't know if you noticed, but on the card that we pass out and also on the banner on the front of the building, there's a scripture reference, and you notice where that's from. That's 1 Timothy 6:17. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. The second opportunity we have going on right now is the school supply drive for Kennedy Elementary. As most of you know by now, years ago we learned that there were more than a dozen homeless students at Kennedy Elementary. Kennedy is right there. I mean, if it weren't for a few houses, you'd be able to see it from here, literally like two blocks that way. And I think there were 13, 14 homeless students the last time we checked. And that means there are children, little kids, in this neighborhood who are living maybe on the kitchen floor of a friend of their mother. Does that make sense? That's what's going on. They classify as homeless. They don't have a place to live. They don't have an address. They're just living, you know, here in this neighborhood, and it's nowhere permanent. And so we got in touch with the school and says, how can we help? And they say they come to school hungry. There's no food. They don't have anything to eat when they get home. They don't have any school supplies. And so we've helped with that through the years. We had a list of school supplies on the bulletin last week. It's been in the slide rotation today. We have an extra list on the bulletin board in the entryway. Take a picture of this list if you can see it. But we've done this for a few years. The school is extremely thankful. I know I didn't always appreciate going to school on the first day and having pencils and erasers and notebooks. But there are kids in this neighborhood who don't have that, and they just show up because they don't have the money. And mom and dad aren't able to provide that, and so we're able to step in and do that. As you know, this is not physically demanding, but it does take some money, doesn't it? It takes some money for us to go out to Staples or Woodman's or Walmart or whatever. You can go online. You can get your phone out and have these things show up at your house tomorrow, which is really, really cool, and then bring them on Wednesday. About a week ago, we sat down with the list in our family. My wife told me what she would appreciate as a teacher. She's like, okay, that, and that. And so click, 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 and click, you know, and it showed up at our house the next day and brought it here to the building. And the emphasis here is if we're rich, which we are, we need to be rich in good works. We need to be generous. We need to be ready to share. And these are two things that we can do that fill that role that Paul is telling us. Over to Ephesians, Paul writes to this church where Timothy's preaching, and he explains the purpose of having a job is to help those in need. He says, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has needs. So the purpose of earning money is to share it. So this morning we've looked at Paul's instructions for those who are rich. This is us. If we are conceited, that's an attitude we can change. No longer looking down on the poor. It's very easy to be condescending. If we trust our stuff more than God, again, we can change that as well. If we're so busy getting new stuff that we don't really enjoy the stuff we have right now, we can also pause and take time to appreciate the blessings that we have, including hot water and bacon. And if we're blind to the suffering that's going on right here in this neighborhood, we need to open our eyes and share. I mean, there are kids in this neighborhood. There are people all around here who don't have the things that we need, the basic essentials. And we can help either with time or with money or with both. And we have some amazing ways to get involved this week. If you have more money than time, find somebody here and give them some cash on the way out today for a Staples run. I bet somebody would be willing to do that for you. If you got $1,000 and no time to go to Staples, see me or somebody, and we'll get that taken care of for you and get you some pencils and get those to Kennedy. God's command to the rich is not that they become poor, but God's command to the rich is that they use their wealth properly. We are the rich, and this is something that we can do. By obeying Paul's command here, he says that we are storing up for ourselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that we can take hold of that which is life indeed. And that points to the absolute reality that there is another life coming after this one. And we prepare for it by putting God first. If we haven't yet obeyed the gospel, the first step is to hear the word of God, which we've heard this morning. To understand what sin is and what God did for us in sending Jesus to live and to die in our place. We accept his offer of salvation by turning away from sin, by confessing Jesus as the Son of God, as we learned in Romans 10 this morning, by allowing ourselves then to be immersed in water for the forgiveness of our sins. If we can help in any way, we hope you'll let us know as we sing this next song. Let's all stand and sing together.